Birth, the Grand Division, the Foreword. In the days following the assassination attempt on President Riker's life, things began changing rapidly in Washington. The chill of greed and lust rotted its way deep into the minds of the agencies, departments, bureaus, and administrations of what the general public recognized as the federal government. The war footing that tourists could see was the same. Rule of law quickly became rule by law, and anyone who resisted the actions of law enforcers could be beaten into submission, or worse. This new government, once operated under a dark cloak of secrecy, was now boldly in the open, putting everyone and everything under surveillance. Anyone opposing the agency government was termed to be mentally ill and could be apprehended and held indefinitely without charges in special camps for anti-government radicals or deported to offshore prisons where enhanced interrogation techniques could be used for decades against them. There was no phone call. There was no legal representation. There was no day in court or speedy trial. The fact that these rights had been abrogated by the DC crime syndicate and then fortified by the European Union was one of the outward signs that the Grand Division had begun. Prior presidents had been carefully scripted to continue the campaign of division, making the political community insanely wealthy at the expense of everyone else on the planet. Influence and access was for sale on every floor of every agency. The greatest game on earth, set up by an ancient intelligence running the banks and their armies, almost completely succeeded, but for the anomalous election of U.S. President Robert Riker. America had been once again masterfully segregated by race, religion, and even sex, and then trained to hate one another. The non-working poor were enslaved through a simple system of debit cards for food and other services that were simply stocked with imaginary currency, trapping them in an endless cycle of unemployment and dependency that forced them to vote for the incumbent or risk starving to death. The buying power of this collective, made of nearly 50 million people in the United States alone, and coupled with regulations preventing the unauthorized sale of local farm goods, lashed the agrarian to the government wagon that was dragging him down the street. The working poor made up another 95 million people in the United States alone, and were professionally organized to protest a concept called income inequality. They joined nearly double that amount in Europe that had been condensed out of made-to-order countries that formed the Eurozone. Millions of jihadists, disguised as refugees from war-torn Middle Eastern states, invaded Europe and the United States, and waited for the signal to strike from within. National debts skyrocketed, while retirement funds in the trillions were used to bail in failing banks, making the fund managers and investment bankers wealthy beyond measure. No one went to jail, but more than 200 bankers committed suicide rather than live in luxury by the blood of their customers. Inside the fully refurbished command center located at NORAD, one of the oldest and most powerful Nephilim, Semyaza, had directed a global war of subterfuge and financial deception to capture Earth's inhabitants. Just when the average person reached the point where religion was an afterthought or a weekly respite for incrementally recovering one's life, Semyaza succeeded in awakening the hatred of the Crusaders in the seeds of Lucifer. Islam was crafted to be the perfect soldier's religion. Mortal life had been finally ground by Islamic leadership into a black dust that choked the parched throats of billions of people in dozens of little NATO creations. Their schools were destroyed, leaving hundreds of millions of people in total ignorance and without the ability to read or to manage their own existence. Life for these minions had become hell. To reach the highest heaven, one had to die in battle and make a pilgrimage to Mecca once in the lifetime. It was exquisite in its design, and Semyaza commanded its operation like a maestro of mayhem. The rest of the world's people hid from the jihadists like individual fish in a school of fish. When the main population flashed right, they went right all at once. When they moved as one, but not as though they were being led by anyone or anything. They reacted to unseen stimuli. A click, or a slight change in temperature, or a feeling would somehow signal the people to avoid danger. Only the straggler would be devoured by the jihadist jackals. World leaders were assassinated, and their countries were plunged into chaos and smoke. The few who stood their ground and tried to quote their constitution were shot or beheaded for an internet video. The few who tried to make the case that this was a violation of the rights of the people to hold their government accountable were drowned with a clarion call from millions of others who demanded the protesters be immediately shot and bulldozed into an unmarked grave and forgotten. Social media became trolled by predator class humans who were often paid to create false flags or to slash at whistleblowers until they wished they had never said anything. Evolving algorithms became sophisticated in tracking and gathering words, sounds, buying habits, and, of course, location patterns of individuals who met the terms of the program. This information was fused together seamlessly to create an ever-growing historical record of each individual. Increasingly, individuals could no longer hide in the crowd because the metadata could place the crosshairs on them for life. The software could predict who opposed Semyaza's reign of terror and then command the assets to eliminate them. It began innocently enough. Grocery providers wanted to know the exact demographic of the person buying their green beans or orange juice. They issued little discount incentives for people to provide their cell phone numbers or their email addresses, and from that they gathered the person's age, sex, race, and employment status. The grocer could then tailor the advertisement budget in real time to reach that person in every neighborhood without printing newspaper inserts for the landfill or the bottom of the birdcage. Semyaza refined the science of profiling to a work of art that allowed groomed politicians to rise from complete obscurity to global prominence in a matter of months. The privacy one valued by every American was gladly handed over to a vast and powerful data collection center in exchange for $4 off their next purchase at the local grocery, or the movie theater, or the clothing store. Two phenomena began to develop in very short order. First, the fish in the school each now had a positive identity, and their data swam with them wherever they went. The people who already aligned with the ideology of a political candidate were easily identified and then contacted by text, robocall, email, or a personal visit from a volunteer. They were realigned and motivated with bribes in the form of money, food, housing, and even healthcare discounts. Perhaps even more important was the successful identification of those people whose ideologies would never be compatible with the politicians in power. The traits that led to this incompatibility were easily identified. These people were often religious and attended church of some kind at least once a month. They were happily married with one or more children. They may or may not own a firearm, and they may have at least a spotty record of voting for candidates who would try to stop the program from going forward. They never violated the laws. In fact, they didn't even need or recognize law, because by nature, they were a peace-loving and merciful people. They were charitable and tolerant, and, up until now, they were invisible to Semyaza's powerful plans. He meant to capture the entire human race for his master, Lucifer. The only way to do that was to make them choose of their own free will and choice to follow the Dark Prince. The presidential election of Robert Riker was like nothing that had ever occurred in America before. Americans were furious over being duped into thinking there was actually a two-party system. He was a write-in candidate who neither had the money nor the media presence to command even a decent showing in the committee-rigged primary. But the semblance of the two-party system was exposed by accident on national TV during a debate in which the two candidates, one Democrat and the other Republican, went after each other with a most repulsive and regrettable show of hatred. It was as though something inside of them snapped, like two movie stars auditioning for the leading role in a major motion picture. The Secret Service agents that had to keep them apart were red-faced and disheveled as the program director shuffled just long enough to commercial break to allow the world to see what was being done to them, the voters. The public was stunned. Both parties had a driving urge to vote, but they needed a way to make a difference. Riker's YouTube policy speeches and certain benefactors within the media industry who felt that something phenomenal was about to occur prepared the way for him to win the election. It was then that the dark forces, working for centuries to capture the entire population through economic and political means, lost their grip around the throat of America. The nation gasped for air and voted for Riker. Within weeks, the crime syndicate that had been operated inside the Washington, D.C. for more than 80 years was exposed to the light. Thousands of roaches, feeding off the taxpayer for decades, ran for the shadows, and the trail of money laundering, bribes, deferred prosecutions, and murder was laid open for all to see. He brought with him a team of trusted cabinet members who swore to clean it up and sterilize the cesspool once known as America's capital. He appointed his attorney general the Eastern Bulldog, Harold T. Kaufman, the trench-fighting governor of New Jersey that had battled the mob, foreign terrorists, and, of course, the fascists barricaded deep inside the dungeon offices in Washington, D.C. He was a former district attorney with a record of no mercy and no plea bargaining with bad guys. He even arrested and successfully prosecuted another district attorney for issuing a writ of deferred prosecution to effectively bless HSBC's criminal activities. The district attorney of Suffolk County, New York, was provided a 1,000-page dossier detailing thousands of phony bank accounts receiving more than $2.2 billion in Mexican drug cash and laundering it out to cartels all over the world, including Afghanistan. The 20% bribe for the deferred prosecution was never fully recovered, but it was strongly suspected that the bulk of it funded off-budget military surveillance activities against the American people. Kaufman put her in jail, along with 32 attorneys, bankers, and Swift Wire transfer employees. Three attempts were made on his life, including a car bomb, but he came through without major injury and a renewed zeal to go after anyone, no matter how high up in the government, and prosecute them according to the law. Riker was immediately successful with the American people, who just wanted a CEO to go to Washington, take control of the Corporation of the United States of America, and say, "Boys, This racket you all have been running for the past 50 years at the taxpayers' expense is over. Kaufman's deck of cards included half the former president's cabinet and financial bundlers who defrauded the government stimulus programs out of billions of dollars to feed back to their donors. The age of donors investing in politics for financial return from taxpayer funds came to a shuddering halt overnight. There were other changes taking place, and not just in America. The effect of national policy on global behavior is sometimes unseen, or at least underreported, to the average person. For nearly 230 years, the earning power behind the free enterprise system of economics made America the world's customer. The ability to invent and innovate had always been wide open, and everyone was encouraged to come up with new ideas or to improve old ones. The cycle of technology development got faster and faster until it was generally observed that global technology was doubling in power and speed every 8 to 10 years. A world that had walked or had ridden horses for thousands of years in less than 100 years was traveling to other worlds and nearly ready to build a proton from nothing but energy. But the dark force working deep under the ground has lived for hundreds of generations of mankind on this earth. He led a small contingent of off-worlders known as Nephilim to the world before the two Earths merged. Later recruited by Lucifer to help him take over the world, they first applied their skills by teaching men and women debaucheries and perversions of the natural order of mankind. They bred with the women and female versions of many animals and nearly had the gene pool of creation ruined before the union of the polarity was initiated. Two separate worlds, one higher energy world and one lower energy world, were blended into a single space in orbit around a main sequence star in the Milky Way galaxy. They took 7 months to settle to some form of harmony. The offspring of the Nephilim were destroyed, and the gene pool of mankind began its slow replenishing process. That is, until the Nephilim returned. They had gone off-planet, or perhaps deep inside the planet, but then they returned. They are immortal. That is to say, they live 1,000 times longer than any human. But they can be killed, and they can be imprisoned. One thing they discovered through painful experience, they could not go against humans in open battle. Humans breed like rabbits, and their sentience includes direct communication with the Creator, which they do not have. Lucifer has the experience, power, and authority to capture souls according to rules of engagement set up before higher Adam was formed. Once a person makes the choice to take something that doesn't belong to them, or rape a child, or commit murder of innocent blood, that person belongs to Lucifer. It becomes apparent very quickly that souls that are acquired by Lucifer through these rules of engagement are lost to the Creator. One by one, worlds have been taken apart and subjected using these same ancient methods of economics and oppression. Although thousands of entrepreneurs every hour of every day try to bring their ideas to fruition through hard work and determination, the ancient system allows for global corporations to write federal regulations, each walking and talking like a tax on anyone who tries to compete with them. Slowly, the air is cut off from the entrepreneur. Then the funds are blocked which might be available for the entrepreneur to start his business. And region by region, industry by industry, the competition is repressed and prevented from entering the marketplace. Riker was doing his best to stop this, to allow the economic engine that made America the greatest experiment in freedom and liberty to restart. The grand division was well underway, but not until the real difference between the good guys and the bad guys was explained to the people. Once he made that historic broadcast using the emergency alert system, the people became aware of the separation. The fact that the darkness could not comprehend the light, and the light could not comprehend the darkness, actually formed a cloak over the wicked. They could tell the world what they were about to do, and then they would do it. Not only was the world not surprised to see the act of terror committed, they were not in the least predisposed to do anything about it, because it was already old news. Even if they saw something live, in person, the news media would describe a different version of what happened, and everyone would believe it. Anyone who claimed a different version would be labeled a conspiracy theorist, a heretic, or a terrorist. Still, the existence of pockets and small gatherings of light were undeniable and mysterious. Riker's radio broadcast began stitching together the areas of light, and a fabric was being formed capable of cradling the innocent and the pure, and keeping them safe and unaware of the monstrous evil that had taken over every government in the world. The Grand Division cracks away from the high places of the world like a shelf of pure snow and ice. Soon an avalanche made of justice will sweep through the dark forests and strip everything from the soil with unspeakable might. And the low places will be filled with the muck made from the bones of billions, and no money or social status will save them. The flesh of the evil poor and the evil rich will be sifted together and smashed into every crack and crevice for the next zenith of mankind to discover. Not quite like being left behind, and not quite like being taken up, the race of man that remains alive on the two Earths will be divided as the planets themselves go their separate ways. The telestial Earth, the temporal planet made of rock and metal, will remain here, in orbit around this yellow sun and with its companion, the gray and stolid moon. The terrestrial Earth will come out of her like the spirit leaving the body, like our notion of death. The flying, leaping, animated part of a living thing leaves the tired and broken flesh behind and assumes its unfettered shape, bearing the scars and the precious memories of many lives and perhaps many worlds. The straitjacket of mortality is unstrapped from the soul, and the spirit expands to its proper bounds, redrawn by every challenge from living life itself. Love expands from it and connects it to everything and everyone else in the universe who also feels this love. As you read this book, you may change. Be prepared for that. Watch for the difference in the shadow of things, for the light will be coming from many directions now. You may see cracks in your own soul. That's okay. That lets the light in. You're alive on this planet at this time for a reason, and it may not be to do anything like what you set about doing when you stepped up to your eyes in your mortal body. For many, it is going to be radically different than anything you have ever heard. For others, it will feel like your origin. Your next destination? Well, that is something perhaps different for each of us. One thing I can guarantee, when you finish this book, you're going to have a glimpse of it. Just a little something to look forward to.